Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. In this week's episode of Saving Yourself from Wall Street, we're going to be talking about stock market valuations. But before we do, I want to take a moment just to apologize to you. I have been very bad at getting podcasts out the past quarter. So from October through December of 2019, I just didn't have the capacity to get any out there. And I absolutely don't want to do that. I want to make sure I'm getting information out to you consistently, week in, week out. But I had a confluence of events that kind of kept me from devoting the proper time to getting some good podcasts done. Part of it was I'm writing a book, and I want to get that book published this quarter, the first quarter of 2020. Also, the intern I had that did a lot of the social media production for me, he has basically a full-time job along with school, so you know his capacity was very limited. And then finally, the last quarter of every year is always a busy time for financial planning. We're doing tax planning, we're doing last-minute trades, we're doing tax loss harvesting. There's really a lot we do in the last quarter, so my time was extremely limited. Plus, we're trying to get ready for the next tax season. So no real excuses, but just accept my apologies and realize we're going to do some good stuff this year. I've got lots of good content coming at you, and I'm committed to making sure it gets out every week. So anyway, I just am finding that regarding the stock market, I have clients approaching me who want to take a little bit more risk in the portfolios. With the U.S. stock market going up almost 30% last year, people really want to get higher returns, and I don't blame them at all. But I'm starting to get a little nervous. Looking at certain valuations, I started to get a little bit more conservative for clients in 2017. Now, that worked brilliantly in 2018 when the stock market was down, but not so much last year. Now, I'm not getting out of the stock market, mind you. I'm just taking some risk off the table. But I'm really starting to see folks anchor to the returns of the stock market. And I think I'm seeing a situation where people are sort of forgetting what happened from 2000 through 2009. And for younger investors, the millennials or even younger than that, well, they've never really experienced, a stock market decline. So I think we're starting to get into an emotional state where we're becoming devoid of what the markets can do. Just want to take a little bit of time just to talk about how I'm coming up with these statements, why I'm getting a little bit more conservative. Again, I'm not out of the markets, but I have been more conservative. And the thing is, I actually have career risk when I do moves like this. If the market continues its parabolic move up from here, and I'm sitting a little bit more conservative, I know clients are going to leave me. But I feel my job is to invest money for clients, not speculate. And whenever I'm looking at valuations, I always try to refer to Benjamin Graham. He's got a great quote on investing. And if you don't know who Benjamin Graham is, he is essentially the gentleman who Warren Buffett, and I'm sure you all know Warren Buffett, but that's who Warren Buffett modeled his investing model or his investing strategy on. And Ben Graham always says, investing is an operation in which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and a satisfactory return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. So, at this point, is the market at a situation where there's some good value in there, or are we starting to get a little speculative? And based on what I'm hearing from clients, I'm starting to feel like people are getting into that speculative mode. Does that mean we're at a peak or anything like that, or the market's about to crash? Absolutely not. I don't know what the markets are going to do, and anybody who tells you that they do certainly doesn't know what they're talking about. But when I look at investing, I try to focus on a few valuation metrics and a few people to get an idea of what I see going forward. Again, nobody can predict the short-term moves of the market. It's impossible to do, but valuations typically can give you a medium-term outlook on various asset classes. Now, the first one that I always go to is the Cape-Shiller price to earnings. So what does that mean? So the price to earnings is a pretty simple concept. Let's say you're looking at, you know, investing in Disney stock. And the current price of Disney is $40 a share. And the earnings per share is $4. So it's as simple as taking that $4 of earnings and divided it into the 40 to give you a price to earnings of 10. So obviously, the lower the price to earnings ratio that you invest in, the better for you as an investor. So what I do is look at the Cape-Shiller price to earnings. Now, this is a little bit different. It doesn't look at individual stocks per se. It looks at the market in aggregate. So it takes the total market capitalization or the total price of the market divided by the earnings. And it doesn't just use current earnings. What it does is it takes the past 10 years of earnings and it adjusts those for inflation. So this kind of smooths out the earnings number and gives you a little bit of a longer term trend that goes through both bear and bull markets. And then it just compares it to the current price. And right now, the Cape-Shiller price to earnings is second only to the year 2000 peak. Currently, the value is at 31.4, which is higher than 87.4% of the past periods. And the all-time peak was March of 2000 when it hit 44. So at 31.4, if we were to hit the peak of what the NASDAQ bubble was, you know, we could see another easily 25% increase from here without any earnings growth, which, you know, stock market people would love. But what scares me is when you take the current figure of 31.4 using the Cape-Shiller methodology, what it's saying is the next 10 years for the U.S. stock market, the average annual return they're projecting is at negative 2.5%. So that means if history were to hold, and history never does, it never repeats, but it does rhyme, it's saying that we could expect negative returns over the next 10 years. And that's kind of scary. And, you know, you could say, well, you're just looking at one metric. It could have flaws. It could be bad. Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. But there's some other valuation metrics that when you look at them, they're kind of scary. The first one is just price to sales. So you look at the price of the stock market in general, of all the companies that make up the stock market, and you compare it to their sales, it has actually recently eclipsed the 2000 stock market peak. So it is in uncharted territory. It's higher than it's ever been. The S&P 500 enterprise value relative to EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, it has also eclipsed its all-time high set in 2000. Again, that should kind of, you know, raise your eyebrows a little bit and, you know, make you take notice. And in market capitalization of the market relative to the size of the economy as measured by the gross domestic product or GDP, that has also reached an all-time high, surpassing the 2000 peak. So there's a lot of metrics that are showing us in really uncharted territory or near highs. And like I said, it's not just valuation metrics I look at. I also try to follow a couple of groups that do a very good job of anticipating future returns. The first one is Jeremy Grantham's company called GMO. So Jeremy Grantham has done a fabulous job of kind of projecting returns over time. If you go back and really research his work, dating into the late 90s, you're going to find that he did a very good job of calling the 2000 and 2007 peaks, as well as accelerated returns after the peaks or the bubbles burst. So he's not somebody who I think you can really label as a permanent bear or a permanent bull, but he really takes an objective look, and his company does, at what future returns people can get. Now, GMO looks at the next 7 years. That's kind of their market. Whereas Cape-Shiller sort of focuses on future 10-year returns, GMO looks at the next seven. And when you look at their current predictions, it's really not something that should be celebrated by investors. So for instance, to give you an idea of what they're looking at, in U.S. large cap stocks, so large company stocks in the U.S., Over the next 7 years, GMO is predicting a negative 3.7% annualized return. It's pretty ugly. For U.S. small caps, so smaller company stocks, they're still projecting a negative return, although not as bad, at negative 1.5%. When they look at international large company stocks, that's really about break even. They're projecting a 0.6% increase on an annual basis, whereas international small cap is a positive 1.9%, a little bit better. One area they do see some decent value is in emerging markets. So emerging markets, as the name implies, they're emerging to become more developed. So you're talking China, Russia, Eastern Europe, South America, countries like that. So they're projecting emerging market stocks to be about a 5.8% annualized return, which isn't all that bad. But they do see some really good value in emerging market value stocks. So value over growth. And they're projecting emerging value at 9.8% annualized. The other thing, when people hear that, they start thinking, well, okay, if stocks aren't going to do very well, maybe I'll just put more into bonds. And that's not really going to help you if GMO is correct in their analysis, because they're projecting for U.S. bonds for the next 7 years to have a negative 1.7% return on an annualized basis. And that's pretty ugly. They're looking at international bonds being even worse if it's hedged to the dollar at a minus 3.7%. And emerging market debt will eke out a small positive 0.7% growth. So again, I follow what these folks say. It tells you nothing about what's going to happen this year or next year or this quarter or next quarter. But it does kind of give you an idea of what you could expect over the medium term. And if you don't think that the current valuation metrics that I'm looking at or GMO is reasonable, there's other folks out there. Another one that I follow a lot is Research Affiliates. Rob Arnett, who is a very brilliant man, they also do a very good job of trying to capture what the market could return over the near future. They look in five-year increments. And what they're looking for is they have some positive returns here. So they're thinking U.S. large cap will return over the next 5 years a positive 2.09%. So at least it's positive, but most investors, I think, would be highly disappointed if they're only going to get 2% annualized over the next 5 years on their stock market returns. Small cap, they're projecting a little bit higher at 3.5% annualized. Emerging large cap, they're expecting a 2.6% return over the next 5 years, positive, with emerging small market being even better at 4.83% upside for the next 5 years. For the developed markets in the international world, they're expecting 1.43% for large company and 4.27% for small company. So at least they're still in the positive realm here. But it's still well below what investors are expecting. And if folks are starting to get more speculative due to the recent run-up in the stock market and the fact that we haven't had any kind of real bear market over the past decade, that could lead to some serious disappointment. Now, again, the main reason, in my opinion, that the equity markets have done so well since the 2009 bottom is the Federal Reserve. Now, the Federal Reserve has been creating liquidity in the markets, which has run to all asset classes. It's gone to stocks, it's gone to bonds, it's gone to real estate. So everything is really, you can't make a case that anything out there is cheap or undervalued for the most part. I mean, certainly there's certain companies or maybe even little sectors or subsectors that are, but in general, I think you could look at every asset class and say they're overvalued. And it's because of the Federal Reserve. Now, the dangerous thing is, I think there's so many people out there that think that the Fed has the back of the markets, that if anything goes wrong, the Federal Reserve can step in and handle it. So they feel like the Fed has a control over the markets. And my problem with that is that's pretty dangerous. It's pretty dangerous to think that, because when you feel like somebody can control something so complex as the market, and that 12 bankers sitting in a room are good enough to know everything that's going on with the markets, you're setting yourself up for a little bit of disaster. I kind of look at market manipulation, which is what they're sort of doing with this massive liquidity injections they continually put into the markets. It's sort of like a dog on a leash or on a chain. You know, you can chain your dog up and keep them on that chain, and they can, you know, they're going to be frustrated. They're never going to be moving around much. You have total control over them. But it always happens that at some point they get off that leash or off that chain. And what happens when that takes place? That dog is gone. That dog takes off. You can't corral it. You got a problem on your hands. And it's sort of the same thing, I think, with the markets. So when everybody thinks that they have control, that a small entity of 12 bankers sitting in a room have control of the market and can totally control any downside, that's when things could go bad. Because if they continually interject liquidity into the markets anytime the market drops a little bit, if something happens, like a recession still takes place, and the Fed injects liquidity and it doesn't stop the bleeding, the faith in the Fed could go away. And if that were to happen, then you're really in some trouble. You know, Katie, bar the door, because it could get ugly. I'm not saying that's going to happen anytime soon. It may not. Hey, it may not happen. Who knows? But it seems like the backdrop to the market continually rising is based on faith in the Fed. And if you look at the return for 2019, you know, that near 30% return, the vast majority of that came from valuation increases, not earnings increases, not dividend increases, but just price to earnings expansion. And that's kind of dangerous. Again, if earnings were going up 30% or dividends were increasing like that, I'd feel pretty good about it. There's really three components that make up what a stock is going to deliver you as an investor. The first one is generally the size of in the increase of earnings or the GDP, which typically over time should be pretty close. So if earnings are going up or GDP is growing up at 2%, and you look at plus the dividend yield, which right now is 1.9%. So just based on the size of the growth of the economy and earnings or dividends, you know, you're looking at about a 3.9% annualized return. The third component for an investor is the price to earnings expansion or contraction. And since it's been expanding so much and we're at historical highs, I don't think that investors could realistically expect it to continue. Does it mean it's going to stop in the short term? No, it doesn't. But it's going to be awfully difficult for it to continue well past where it's at now. So let's just assume, again, that we don't get any kind of expansion from here. You're looking at probably a 3.9% annualized return going forward. Now, the bad thing is, what if we have price to earnings contraction? That's where it can get pretty ugly. So again, I'm not calling for folks to get out of the stock market. I'm not telling you to jump, you know, out of the stock market whole hog. But I'm telling you not to jump to the siren's call that the market has delivered last year. Don't try to get more aggressive because you think you're missing out. You need to understand what your risk capacity is as an investor. At what point do you start to lose sleep when the market heads south? Once you understand that, then you can start to develop a portfolio that's structured with stocks, bonds, and other non-correlated assets to try to keep you above that limit. And then you need to stick to it. Now, obviously, historical correlations may not hold. You know, even if you think you've got a portfolio that's going to keep your threshold, your downside threshold in place, it may not. But you, what else can you do? You have to look at the past to try to get an idea of the future. So as you're looking at making moves in your portfolio this year, I'm hoping that you're not going to go really aggressive because it just doesn't look like it's the best time to go more aggressive than you normally would want to. Focus on the long term, figure out what your risk tolerance is, and stick to that. I think you'll be much better served if you do that as opposed to trying to get more aggressive in this kind of environment. So again, apologize, I've been a little missing here with the podcast. We're going to get things rolling again. Hope to have some really good stuff for you. And if you have any questions, please drop me a line. Let me know. Would love to talk to you about that stuff. And thanks for listening. Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast, along with other articles and videos, at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kirk Kinder. Kirk Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.